Weight loss solutions are not one-size-fits-all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert-guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. Back in Stark Vegas after a day back down south. I didn't get wards yesterday, though. I didn't get wards. And I was back in Columbia. I covered the tremendous Mississippi State win over Southern Miss. We'll spend a little bit of time with that as we get ready to preview our series with Queens. But nevertheless, had the high tail down there, spent the morning with some students at Columbia High School talking writing. Really just trying to inspire them to understand that even though you're from a small town, you don't have to be small time, right? And I think it was important for me to do that. I had a guy tell me, I think I've shared this with you guys before. I had a guy tell me on the When the Bottom Falls book tour that I was the most prolific writer to come from Columbia, Mississippi. And that meant something to me. Now, granted, it's not a heated race, surely, but to be known as the most prolific writer from your hometown is pretty special. And so I felt that I needed to go back and spend some time with them. I got some cool things planned for me a couple months from now. We'll talk about that at a later date. But it's super cool, man. And one of the ladies that was part of the event explained to me that her dad was my Algebra 2 teacher. And I said, hey, that was his classroom right there. And she goes, yeah, now it's my office. I thought, how cool is that? But Columbia High School is very special to me. It was good to be back home and spend some time with them. Went by the public library and visited with them a little bit. And it's kind of a surreal experience. I'm old enough to remember when our public library in Columbia was a house. You know, it was somebody's house on Broad Street. And the city had this basically taken over this house. So there wasn't much to the library. And my grandmother, Jo Selman, lived directly across the street from Columbia High School at 608 Branton Avenue. And the new library for Marion County, the regional library that was built there on Broad Street, was constructed when I was a kid. And my grandmother used to take us there for, you'd go here, to read and go listen to books be read, and you'd meet people and that kind of stuff. So it was an event, and now I've got books on those shelves, and it's pretty cool, man. I mean, sometimes life comes at you full circle, and really enjoyed my time there and had to get back. It's a busy weekend, obviously, got a lot going on, and there were some personalizations. Some of you have ordered personalized books, copies of The Dude, through the dutynoblebook.com website. And so I took that route back, and I went through Jackson and Madison and all that stuff and signed those books. So those should be going out in the mail to you today. And so if you want a personalized copy of The Dude or any of my sports titles or When the Bottom Falls, you can find it at dutynoblebook.com. And we do get together periodically, and I sign those personalizations. But I had to sign a bunch of stock, too, for bookstores and some of our great retailers around the greater Starkville area. And so all that stuff is important. But it was not just an easy day. Still had to do some work when I was down there. I told my staff, don't expect any content from me, but I still ended up doing a couple things. And I share that with you because, you know, this is a passion for me. As I shared with the kids yesterday, I have to write every day. If I don't write every day, things kind of get, you know, backed up mentally. I start thinking about things. I'm always thinking about things that I want to write or, you know, for you guys over at jeanspage.com or books that I want to work on and some stuff that I do kind of on the side. But I'm always thinking about those things. And if I don't get to write for a couple days, it just kind of gets convoluted, you know. I'll probably get a little bit of grouchy. But, yeah, enjoyed being back at Columbia High School. I am a Wildcat for life, and that was one of the things that I kind of shared with them, too, is, like, you know, the people that you meet in high school, in many respects, not everybody has the same experience in high school. I understand that. But a lot of those people are going to be your friends your whole life, you know. And they may not be friends that you talk to every day, but they're your friends. A lot of those people end up being in your wedding. They're people that you can count on and people that, you know, when you go back home, you kind of, you run into and you're happy to see them. You know, it reminds you of a simpler time in life. But, yeah, it was a great day. So if you were on Gene's page yesterday, I wasn't around a whole lot, even though we did get a couple stories up, including the interview with Jake Hendrick, the head coach at Queens. And we will discuss some of that on today's show. But I hope it's a great day for you. It's Friday. I hope it's payday for you. It is March 7th in the year of our Lord 2025. There's a lot going on in the world. Before I get too deep into this, I wanted to, you guys know that I'm somewhat acquainted with the guys in Faster Pussycat. And there's been a tragedy within the Faster Pussycat camp. And you never know how to handle these things, right? But Tammy Down, who's the lead singer of Faster Pussycat, his lovely fiance, Kimberly Birch, they've been together for, I think, 10 years or so, that she allegedly jumped off the ship after a heated argument with him. And that's a difficult thing to live with. I'm told that there's like video of all this stuff and that it does not appear to be any foul play, and you certainly hope that's not the case. But no matter the circumstances, Kim is a young lady that I've met and spent time with multiple times. It is it's very difficult, you know, to think about people that you care about having to deal with an unspeakable tragedy like this. But yeah, no Faster Pussycat top 10 today. But yeah, it's a situation we're monitoring. I won't say closely monitoring because I'm not that kind of journalist, right? But you know, I know Danny and Chad pretty well, and of course had a chance to hang with the whole band many times. Ace Van Johnson's now back with the band for a while after a little time with LA Guns. And you know, it's just a tough situation. And you can begin to imagine having to deal with this in your life. You just, some incredible tragedy happens, and then to be a public figure and have everybody kind of speculate. So eager for this to all kind of be, you know, I guess out of the headlines in some respects too. So, you know, these people that I know and I care about will have the opportunity to kind of properly grieve. But, you know, our hearts are broken for everybody involved. And, you know, I'm not one to pry, right? I'm not going to start texting people. And, you know, I've got some, when all this stuff began to break, I reached out to a couple friends, mutual friends, and said, hey, you know, this is a pretty crazy thing. It's happening here. And so I've been able to get a little information. But I wanted to share that with you guys because many of you know that how much I think of those guys. And anytime that they're within a reasonable driving distance, I try to go, you know, and go and hang and just enjoy the show, you know. Really like those guys a lot, and I can't believe this has happened. But it's one of those things, too. I mean, you never know from one day to the next when, you know, something unexpected may happen to you or someone you care about or someone within, you know, your friend or family circle, and they're no longer here. It's another reminder to let people know that we love them. And I think that's really been the message, you know, at least from my part in recent days, is, you know, sorry this happened, love you guys, you know. And I shared that with you guys because a lot of people have seen this stuff in the media, and it's disgusting the way that some people act online. They don't have any information, and they're just like, hey, well, this is what I think happened. Were you there? Well, no. Do you have a friend that was there? No. This is just what I think. Well, let me tell you, in the words of the great Rock, it doesn't matter what you think. Those are the kinds of things that just absolutely make me angry. You know, when people begin to do this needless online speculation about things they don't know anything about. So that's where we are. But I love those guys and love Kim. And I've seen some postings from her family. It's gut-wrenching, man. It really is. And you want answers, right? Because you're trying to make sense of the unexplainable. But I can tell you these are good people. And these are people that are dealing with something that very horrific in a very public way. And that's a shame. It really is. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of the show. We love Bulldog Burger Company. We've loved them since the beginning. We've loved them since they, even before they loved us, right? I love Bulldog Burger Company, and it's one of the things I love most about Starkville. It removes a lot of guesswork for me when I begin to think about what I'm going to eat week to week, month to month, because I eat for enjoyment, not just nourishment, right? I want to enjoy my meal, and you do too. You're going to enjoy a meal at Bulldog Burger Company. Three great locations to serve you: University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Rich and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They will make you and everybody around you better looking. We all need more of that. Get that chocolate shake or the Nutella shake for the ride home. You can ride that ride home with a smile. And I'm one of those kinds of people, I always have to have a palate cleanser. It drives my wife crazy, but I do. I have to have something. And sometimes it's, you know, maybe a bowl of Raisin Bran, or maybe it's, you know, some Werther's Originals or something like that. After I eat, I have to have a palate cleanser. And that's the great thing about Bulldog Burger Company. You can go in there and have those incredible appetizers. Whether you get the spring rolls or not, even though I'm an advocate for those, I want the world to be a more beautiful place. Have a great burger or the chicken sandwich or the Sloppy Joe sliders. And then the chocolate shake does a great job kind of, you know, kind of washing it all down. Yeah, so be sure and check them out next time that you're in town or on the way to town. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Okay, let's talk women's basketball. I know that's one of the things a lot of people want to talk about. I made some phone calls yesterday before we get into speculation about Sam Purcell and what's happening over at Auburn. Let's first go back and kind of go over quickly, you know, the last two games. The Lady Bulldogs now eliminated from the SEC tournament. But like many of you, I firmly believe that we have done enough to make the NCAA tournament. And the win over Missouri, and how wild was that? We were covering the Southern Miss game when all that was kind of happening, when that historic run that the Bulldogs made to kind of put that game away. So I think we needed to win a game in the tournament, and we've done that. And we lose to Ole Miss last night. But now 21-11 overall and 7-9 in an elite conference. And so, you know, we feel good about it. You know, probably an 8-9 game, you know. And, you know, it is what it is, right? But to get back in the tournament after a one-year hiatus, and you look on paper and look at what Sam has done during his time here at Mississippi State, it's pretty remarkable. I mean, it truly is. And to think about, too, the you know, he's always going to be compared to Vic Schaefer. Yeah, and fair or unfair, that's the reality of it. Now, it's a much better situation than he found, you know, following the Nikki McRae-Pinson era, God rest her soul. But, yeah, now we're back in a situation where, hey, you know, we're routinely going to postseason play. And I think that's an important thing. There was a time in our school's history where we really didn't keep up with or, you know, pay a lot of attention to women's basketball unless we were really good and headed to an NCAA tournament. But it appears that we're about to go to our 13th tournament in women's basketball. And Sam Purcell has been a part of a few of those already. So we'll see how things go. But real quickly here, kind of looking back at the win over Missouri, and it's just remarkable too. And it says a lot about this team, and I think in some respects a lot about this coaching staff. They could have easily just said, you know what, man, this just isn't our day. You know, ladies, we're going to have to leave this thing in the hands of the committee. But they're like, no, we're not going to do that. we're going to get out of here and we're going to play hard and we're going to see where the chips fall when the clock hits zero. And the ladies just put together an incredible run. I think when it's all said, I mean, it's just one of those things you begin to kind of work through and you think, okay, surely they'll make a basket here. Will they go 11 minutes without scoring? It's nuts, man. It truly is. And it's pretty interesting to think about what this team is capable of doing when everybody is playing well and playing well as a team. I think that's an incredible accomplishment to do what they've done, but also, too, to have the opportunity to kind of put an exclamation point in many respects on their postseason resume. Yeah, pretty interesting stuff. And the Bulldogs win 75-55. And when you look up, midway through that third quarter, you were kind of like me, I'm sure. Like, well, this is it. You know, this is it. This is how it's going to go. Pretty incredible. The best scoring run, 31 points for Mississippi State. 31-0 run. Missouri's best run was a 7-0 run. That's kind of interesting, too. 21 points off turnovers for State, 38 points in the paint, 10 on a second chance, 4 on the fast break, 31 from the bench. And, we talk about what a difference maker Medina Okot is and certainly what she can be. Pretty impressive. And I thought she was a difference maker in this game. You're looking at the big numbers here. State was plus 20 with her on the floor, but plus 30 with Destiny McFall on the floor and plus 37 with Anaya Russell on the floor. You know, that's pretty interesting stuff too. But Okot pulls down 8 rebounds in the game. It's just, it's one of those deals where we didn't know that we were going to like women's basketball as much as we do, and then we had it for a while, and then all of a sudden, maybe it's not at the level we had, and it may never be that way again. But there's a part of us, I think, we feel like something was kind of missing in our lives during some years. It's like, well, I remember when Nikki McRae-Pinson lost that game at South Florida. Immediately, people were like, hey, this is not going to work out. And just really wasn't, wasn't the best of circumstances for her, obviously. But, coming in during COVID and all this kind of stuff like that, it's just interesting. I mean, it's kind of nuts when you all go back and look at it. But, here we are, And down 14 points in this game. 14 points, which was the largest deficit that we have overcome this year, and then you end up winning by 20. I mean, it's one of those moments, too, I think you look back and say, this is kind of one of those quintessential moments in program history where you look at Sam Purcell and say, this was a great job of coaching down the stretch. And so we win that game, and of course we advance to take on Ole Miss. And it doesn't matter where we're playing or who we're playing or, kind of what happens here. But, we get out to the early 6-0 lead, and then they get hot, and it really felt like they were able to kind of get to the rim at times with impunity. And we battle back, take a lead, and then we didn't close out the first half very well and allowed them to take the advantage to the break, and then came out there in the second half, and it just really felt like we could never get over the hump. And there were so many times we would cut it down to maybe 6, and they would take it right back out. And I don't think it's, bad to suggest that they're a better team than us. They just are, And I really thought at times we gave them some trouble when we were fresh on the defensive end, because I thought our athleticism really kind of bothered them. They were pulling and grabbing and things like that. They weren't quick enough for us. But the reality of it is when they got in transition, we struggled a bit with them too. It took a while for Jaquela Jordan to get going, but 18 points, 6 rebounds for her. Medina Okot with a double-double, 14 points, 10 rebounds. And she's got to be a bigger focal point moving forward. She's kind of new to the game, right? Destiny McFall with 11 points off the bench. Anaya Russell and Chandler Prater both with 10. So pretty balanced scoring there. We ran into what I believe was a better team. And that's just kind of the reality of life sometimes. It happens. It doesn't matter how well you prepare. Doesn't matter what your game plan is. Sometimes you just run into somebody that's a bad matchup for us. And I think that's just kind of really the case with us and Ole Miss this year. And certainly we don't expect to see them the rest of the year.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpoints. TC.
Gents are going to host now, and it's a big deal for them. And maybe they'll get some. Maybe some of those opposing fans will come and kind of buy some tickets. You know, since they're having difficulty, you know, selling tickets and getting people to come. It's been a constant theme there. But what you all want to know about is kind of Steve, what's going on with Sam Purcell in Auburn? Well, the first thing we will know is Sam's an Auburn guy. Right, and Sam's father-in-law was a former women's basketball coach at Auburn, so he is an obvious candidate for the job. It makes perfect sense, right? And knowing John Cohen the way that I do, John likes to do things that make sense, and sometimes they may only make sense to him, but it's very well thought out. You know, John's a very cerebral guy, and that's what the thing you begin to ask yourself. Okay, well, John's already done the due diligence here into Sam Purcell when he first hired him to be a head coach. He'd never been a head coach before. You know, he was a lead assistant at Louisville. You bring him here, and you've had a chance to kind of watch him develop as a coach. And earlier this year, a lot of people were like, well, you know, Auburn's probably not going to take a chance on him. But it would be ignorant to ignore the possibility. Now, I'm told from pretty reliable sources that there are some other names ahead of him. But it makes a lot of sense for them to go after Sam, right? And that's the thing that I think about, too, is like if I'm John Cohen, then I begin to kind of ask myself, okay, if I go get Sam, who wants to be here, and I believe he would probably crawl to Auburn, you don't have to worry about hiring a women's basketball coach for a while. Now, I don't know how much Auburn fans really care about women's basketball. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not going to speak for them. But I think we probably all felt, once John Cohen got the job at Auburn, that Johnny Daniels' days are probably numbered. And here's kind of the reality of that, too. I think Johnny may have done better if her first job had been like a G5 job. Because, you know, she had been Vic's lead assistant forever and did an amazing job here at Mississippi State. You know, Vic and Johnny were kind of mom and dad for Mississippi State women's basketball. You know, and so when Vic would have to kind of go get into somebody a little bit, you know, Johnny would be, you know, the comforter. But she was also the person, too, that really pushed them, especially those bigs, to get better. You know, so it was an interesting tandem. And I'm sure that, you know, that Vic is probably thinking about that. You know, hey, can I bring Johnny Harris back to help at Texas? Now, that didn't change a lot with the situation between Sam and Auburn. But, I think if Johnny had had a subpar year last year, that this would have probably transpired last year. I think it was simply a matter of time. I just don't think, and I think there's enough evidence to support this, that Johnny is an SEC head coach. I think she's a tremendous assistant, tremendous recruiter, and probably would have done really good at the G5, just kind of figuring how to run the show, right? It's one thing to be, you know, kind of the Robin to Batman, and then all of a sudden when you've got to be, you know, the person making the difficult decisions, there's a learning process there. And so I think maybe had she had the opportunity to kind of, maybe go to, you know, like a Memphis or somewhere like that, put together a few years, I think maybe she could have been a little more successful at an SEC or a Power 4 job. But the reality of it is that there's a vacancy now on the Plains. And our head coach, obviously, is a guy that makes a lot of sense. But the current feedback that I have is that while he may be a candidate, there appear to be some candidates ahead of him. on their wish list, and we'll see how things progress. But you can never rule anything out in these coaching searches. And listen, I've had people in the past too that you'll call them and they'll say, "Hey, now my coach is not interested in the job," and then you find out after making a few more calls that there are people running some smoke, you know. And I think that's an aspect of this thing too, that you got to be careful with this, because there's a lot of relationships involved here. Obviously, hiring James Armstrong, and his wife was an Auburn grad, right? James had spent some time at Auburn, has history there, leaves our program after the greatest year in Mississippi State soccer history to go to Auburn. And there were some people like, well, if he's going to leave anyway, Auburn's probably should hire him. If James felt like he had taken things as far as he could take them at Mississippi State, I don't know that that's correct. But if he was going to leave anyway, it kind of makes sense, right? But, this whole thing with Sam, we've known since the day that he got here that he was an Auburn man. And so, again, it makes a ton of sense that he would be mentioned as a candidate. But I would just caution our fans right now to not just accept and say, well, this is how it's going to go. And I think there's some of our fans that are kind of mixed about this, right? They're going to be mad. Like, if Sam leaves, there are going to be some people that be like, I'm glad he's gone. Fair, unfair. I'm sure there's some people that will have that, because I think they're kind of unfairly comparing him to Vic Schaefer. And Vic wasn't a proven coach when he got here either, just so you know. Maybe you've forgotten. Go back and look at his record. Was it Sam Houston State? So there is an acclimation process for every coach. But the Sam Purcell thing is a little different, So it's wise to be, I guess, somewhat concerned. It's not going to change anything. We can sit here and worry and speculate all we want to. It's not going to change whatever Sam Purcell, John Cohen do. But the current information that I have, and of course things change quickly, is that he is a candidate, but he is not the priority candidate. And we'll see how that goes. But, there's some people, of course, if he leaves, they're going to be like, hey, well, John Cohen took another one of our coaches, it's John's job to do what he can to advance the academic and athletic efforts of Auburn University, And so there are other people that feel like, well, you know what, it's kind of victimizing your alma mater. And I get that aspect of it too, But I understand how everybody feels about all that stuff. But again, we'll keep you updated as we hear things. As we get things, we'll share them on the jeanspage.com basketball message board. And of course, immediately after Johnny got fired, people were like, well, Sam's going to go. And again, so much of that too is just because it makes sense, right? It's not like this comes out of nowhere. We've known from the beginning that there was a possibility that should Auburn come up, that Sam was going to be mentioned in connection with that. And I suspect that everybody in the Auburn media has probably got him on their boards, right? Wouldn't you? On the hot board? If there is such a thing. We ran that and we had a couple of hiring decisions to make. But that's kind of where things stand today. And certainly nothing's going to happen with Sam in the middle of having to coach the NCAA tournament. And so that's what's interesting too, that we'll get through this next week, and then we'll have an opportunity to have our selection show. And I am confident that the next time that Sam Purcell is given the opportunity to address the media, that is going to be one of the first questions that he's asked, is what has been his level of interest or involvement with Auburn as of late. Of course, he's under contract, and certainly Zach Selman would be like, really don't want you talking to my coach during the middle of the NCAA tournament, but there's a reason that people have agents. And so how that question is worded is going to be very important, but also, too, I'm sure Sam, no matter any interest in or from Auburn, Sam's going to tell you a whole lot. I think it'll be a situation where, hey, my focus right now is Mississippi State. And then, of course, it won't be a denial. But it certainly will lead to a lot of speculation here until Auburn makes a hire. But I think that's one of those things that we're just going to have to kind of monitor ourselves, and we will do our best to kind of keep you all abreast. So let's do our close with Blair, player of the game. And I guess really when you go back and think about it, maybe we'll do of the Mississippi State tournament. And I think I'm going to go with it'd be easier to go with Jerkayla Jordan, but I think I'm going to go with Destiny McFaul because she was instrumental in that comeback against Missouri. You had a good game against Ole Miss, too, and even though she was not 100%. So that's going to be your close with Blair, player of the game and of the week for Mississippi State women's basketball. Blair is our friend in the mortgage industry, 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. Blair, 24 years of experience in the mortgage industry. Look no further than Blair Chandler when you need to get things going in your life to make the dream of home ownership a reality. It's a very convoluted process. They don't tell you that when you're a kid. Like you go through high school and college, you're thinking, hey, you know, this is just how things happen. No, you got to have somebody working well for you. You know, you got to have somebody out there getting some things taken care of for you, you know, and that's a big part of things, right? You need a professional working for you. So give Blair that text or call today. Visit the website, closeofblair.com. So whether you're looking for your first home, your next home, or your retirement home, Blair Chandler is the name to know. A Mississippi State guy through and through, a season ticket holder in multiple sports. Been with me a long time, been my friend a long time. And I can tell you there have been several Boneyard listeners over the years that have closed loans with Blair Chandler at closeofblair.com. Be sure and check it out today. All right, time for today's top 10 list. And, you know, we're playing the Royals of Queens. And a lot of people are confused. They say, Steve, is this another team from New York? No, they're from Charlotte, North Carolina. And I had a chance to speak with Coach Jake Kendrick, and we'll talk about that a little bit here in the next segment of the show. But I thought we would do a top 10 list today kind of in honor of our opponents. Does that make sense? Are you with me there? You know. And so, again, your top 10 list brought to you by Kalito Guitars, a company that is owned and operated by Mississippi State folks. Based out of Lake Jackson, Texas, they sell electric, acoustic, and classical guitars. They're known for their high-quality instruments, their exemplary customer service, and their great expert advice. And maybe you don't know what you need. Maybe you want to buy a gift for a friend that's a new player or maybe a seasoned player, and Kalito can help you with that. High-quality instruments, obviously, premium sound woods, including spruce, cypress, mahogany, rosewood. It's a superb fit and finish. Excellent setup for easy playing. Kalito does a complete setup inspection of every guitar in their shop before even shipping it out to you. So if you're looking to get into guitar or you've got a young player that is first, you know, kind of getting going here, rather than go and get them some pawn shop guitar, which is kind of cool, I have some. Maybe when you know that they're serious about it and you want to get them a serious instrument without having to break the bank, you depend on our friends at Kalito Guitars. Visit them at KalitoGuitars.com or call 979-297-4733. And here's the cool thing. We'll give you a coupon code, right? Whether you're ordering online or you're ordering over the phone, let them know that BSR sent you. That's right. That's your promo code, BSR. You get 10% off the purchase, free shipping, and no sales tax unless you live in Texas. And then a 5% portion of your purchase will be donated to the Bulldog Initiative / Bulldog Excellence Fund. How about that? So not only are you getting a high-quality instrument from Mississippi State people, you're getting a discount, and there's a contribution made to Mississippi State. That's about the best deal running right there. So for your guitar needs, Kalito Guitars. Okay, so we're going to have some guitars mentioned in this thing. Top 10 list about Queens. Queens. And again, they are the Royals. What a great name. What a great nickname. Queens Royals. I love it. And so our number 10 song is going to be Royals from Lourdes. And that, you remember what a big hit that was? You know, because we'll never be Royals, right? And it's one of those things, too, I think a lot of people kind of like, you know what, that's just kind of who we are, right? And that's so funny, too. Everybody gets out there on social media. Everybody's a king and a queen. Let me tell you, more of you guys are jesters and pages and squires than you are kings and queens. But that's what happens. Everybody gasses each other up. And I think this song came along at a good time, right? Yeah, we're never going to be royals. But they are the queen's royals. So I thought we would sneak that one in there. As part of their nickname. But the rest of these songs are all Queen songs. Only one of them from the band Queen. You know what a Freddie Mercury fan that I am. But so here we go. One of my favorite songs from the 80s, I believe it was released in 1984, I think. It's Billy Ocean's Caribbean Queen. And it really sparked a nice run for Billy Ocean. You know, there was so many, of course, you know, he gets mentioned by, you know, Little John and East Side Boys, too. But Billy Ocean put together a nice little, you know, maybe we should do a Billy Ocean list. Have we done one? I don't know. But Billy Ocean became kind of a mainstay on MTV. But when this song came out, it was like, this is so interesting. It's so sultry and smooth and so soulful. I think I dig it. And, of course, there weren't a ton of videos in production in the infancy of MTV. Like Eddie Grant's Electric Avenue, like we saw that every hour, you know, it seemed. But Billy Ocean was kind of made for MTV. Very talented guy, but also, too, he wrote some songs that y'all remember, right? It's like Get Out of My Dreams and Into My Car. It's great, man. But it all started with the Caribbean Queen. Number eight, we would be remiss if we're putting a list together of queens without paying homage to the Dancing Queen of ABBA. I have another big band, too, that had a big run in the late 70s. It seemed like every time I turned around, ABBA was on the radio. And a lot of it's because of the harmonies, right? They were just so finely tuned with each other. I think this is one of those songs, too, that people know really more from the beat and the instrumentation. But ABBA, fun band. And it's nice that here we are in 2025 still talking about some of these artists. Maybe it's because I'm old. Speaking of old, it's off the Morrison Hotel. It's The Doors, Queen of the Highway. That's a little bit of a deeper cut, but I think you'll have some fun with it. It's very typical Doors, too. It's very trippy. It's got this whole airy effect in the background. It's not, you know, it's not Roadhouse Blues, right? It's not that. You know, it's a little more of the psychedelic. You can hear kind of Ray's influence on this. You know, you got that interesting organ part, but I think you'll dig it. Queen of the Highway. Number six, one of my favorite bands of all time, and this song really kind of led to the decision to make this their name. They wrote the song, they were still working through this. This goes back to the debut album. It's Queensryche's Queen of the Reich. Queen of the Reich. And for those of us that have been Queensryche fans for a long time, you know, I first learned of them, you know, reading either like Hit Parader or Circus Magazine or something like that. And then Rat took them out. Like, they went out. It was the Warning Tour. They were the opening act on the Invasion of Your Privacy Tour. And so they came to Mississippi. And we had never heard anything quite like Jeff Tate. And so then you got to go back and listen to the older stuff. It's like you go get the Warning album and you're like, well, this is kind of cool. And then you go back and you hear like Take Hold of Flame, right? And which to this day, they still play that. But Queen of the Reich, one of the songs that kind of put these guys on the map. Okay, the next five songs, I think you're all going to know really well. You've known most of these, but the next five, I think you're going to know really well. And we're going to classic rock all the way, even though it kind of breaks my heart that Guns N' Roses is now considered classic rock. You forget you weren't in high school yesterday. Even though I may have visited yesterday, it's been a while since I've been in high school. And, of course, I was alive and had a chance to enjoy all of this music. I was awake when Guns N' Roses' Appetite for Destruction album first kind of hit the airwaves with the Welcome to the Jungle video. Overnight, it was like 2 in the morning. We'd been out, and we got home to watch Headbangers Ball, and MTV is still on. Next thing you know, Welcome to the... I'm like, what in the world is this? Went out and bought Appetite Destruction on cassette the very next day at Bebop Record Shop. And one of the tracks on there, it's a deep cut, but every song on that album felt like a single. And we know them all, and to this day, they all feel like... It's kind of like the first Foreigner album, and it's a little bit like Led Zeppelin 4. You know, it's like there are just some albums that every song felt like a single. And that's how it was for Appetite for Destruction. It's like everybody in my circle of friends, you had your favorite songs, but they weren't necessarily singles. And so we're going to go with Rocket Queen today off Appetite for Destruction, one of the greatest debut albums of all time. And maybe that's limiting that album a little bit. It's one of the best rock and roll albums ever, even though it was a debut. Super cool. Okay, number four, going back to a band that actually took Guns N' Roses out on a tour. And it's so interesting, if you've read Walk This Way, the Aerosmith biography, I guess you could say, and I have, Steven Tyler talks about, he and Joe Perry, at the end of the tour, they wanted to give Guns N' Roses some high-quality luggage because everything they had was just falling apart. You were a young band. And everybody was making a ton of money on them at the time. And so they gave them this nice luggage. And Guns N' Roses' manager was really upset about it, which is stupid. Just goes to show you that maybe they didn't have the best of management. But Aerosmith, as a parting gift off the tour, bought all this incredible luggage to give to the guys. You know, so they'd have something nice to travel with. True story. But we're going to go with Kings and Queens from Aerosmith. And if you go back and listen to the older catalog, to me, this is when things really kind of became, I don't know, maybe this is when Aerosmith became Aerosmith. If you know what I'm saying, like when they began to kind of get the classic Aerosmith sound, right? It was around this era. Maybe you're not familiar with that. But it's the Draw the Line album. And I think that's, again, kind of when things began to kind of come together for them. It was released in 77. But, you know, they had had some other albums in the discography, obviously. But it's just so interesting to me to go back and look in hindsight about the evolution of that band and their sound. And I contend to you to this day that Aerosmith is America's greatest rock band of all time. Jumping across the pond a little bit, and we would be remiss if we didn't mention the Sex Pistols. Never mind the bollocks, here come the Sex Pistols. And it's God Save the Queen. And I remember one day that Mike Leach and I were together, and we were asked to take a picture, and I had on a Sex Pistols shirt. And before they agreed to have the picture taken, Mike's like, "Hey, what's that on your shirt?" I said, "Well, Coach, it's Sex Pistols." He goes, "Oh, well, I got to make sure it's not like a legalized marijuana thing or something like that. I got to be careful what I'm endorsing when I take these pictures." And that sounds like a joke, but he meant it. It's true. But he was perfectly okay with me wearing a Sex Pistols shirt. I don't know that Coach really cared that much about that sort of stuff. But God Save the Queen was a song that was a very controversial topic. And that's what made the Sex Pistols and Johnny Rotten so incredibly amazing. And it's just a one album, too, guys. It's so nuts to think about that. The Sex Pistols, if you go back and think about Guns N' Roses and other bands like that, the Sex Pistols really kind of spawned those acts. But God Save the Queen, very tongue-in-cheek song of protest in jolly old England. Sticking with English bands, you knew at some point Queen would be on here. And yes, it's Killer Queen. I mean, that's one of the most obvious ones to come up. And again, great harmonies on this. And I thought Freddie's vocal delivery is absolutely flawless on this track. But number one, and we play this song at Duty Noble all the time, shout out to Brian Haydad, it's Mountains, Mississippi Queen, because they talk about, you know, way down around Vicksburg, you know, around Louisiana way. And Leslie West was a guitar player for Mountain, and he died a couple years back. God rest his soul. But that riff is from the mind and creative heart of Leslie West. And there are so many people that talk about those great guitar players from the 70s. And a lot of people in the media, maybe so much, didn't give Leslie his due. But he was the guitar player. There are a lot of people from that era. A lot of people are like, you know, hey, this guy from Mountain is legit. And so always good to give a shout out to Leslie. And again, God rest his soul. I mean, the older I get, the more of those we're going to say, right? You know, it's just the circle of life that we talk about. But there you go. That's your top 10 songs about Queens as we welcome the Queens Royals to Stark Vegas for the very first time. First pitch, 6 p.m. today, and then 2 and 1. It kind of threw me for a loop yesterday when I'm looking that up. Oh, it's 6? Oh, we've been at 4 o'clock. But some warmer weather, and you know, we're a little bit concerned, I guess, about potential rain in the forecast. But I'm going to let Dr. Brown worry about that. Me worrying about that is not going to change anything. And you worrying about that isn't going to change anything. But there is some rain in the forecast on both Saturday and Sunday. We will do our best to get all these games in. And if that means we've got to get creative with start times, that's what we'll do. But nothing yet. And they'll let us know this evening. But just plan on being here. And State needs to take all three of these games. And that's an important aspect of it, too. We talked about last week we needed to go no worse than 2-2. We were hoping to go 3-1. We go 1-3. So we got to kind of make some things up. And we felt like if we could get through Southern Miss, we got a chance to post a 4-in-1 week. And then head to Biloxi with some juice, and we'll talk about those Biloxi games on Monday. I'm heading down, of course, on Tuesday morning. We'll spend the night down there. We'll cover game one. We'll cover game two. We'll come back to Starkville. And, you know, so we'll see about your Wednesday show, you know, when that's going to happen, you know. So hopefully I'll be able to record that show for you from Biloxi. But that's a programming note that we'll make then. But, yeah, let's get ready to get to our college baseball preview brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Campus Bookmart, an outstanding place to do business. They have the best selection of Mississippi State merchandise in the known universe. A lot of people make that claim. They are pretenders to the throne. Miss Kathy Brown does an amazing job outfitting that place with all the things, the wares, the merchandise, the gift ideas that you need to satisfy the gift benefits for the people around you. There is something there for every Bulldog in your life. And perhaps that includes the graduating Bulldog. And you can be the favorite aunt, uncle, or grandparent by, hey, let mom and dad know, hey, I'm going to buy them a great diploma frame from Campus Bookmart. So you can make that purchase online or in person. If you can't see their smiling faces, visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. And use promo code BSR. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. But buy yourself something too. You know, I take a lot of joy in giving, but I also like to buy myself stuff too. Like, you know, I can't stay off Amazon buying new concert shirts. You know, it's just, you know, I rep bands, right? And so you need to rep Mississippi State every chance you get. And there's always that one wall where there's not the perfect thing. You need some gift. You can probably find it at Campus Bookmart. The best place to buy Mississippi State merch. All right, as you know, Mississippi State will welcome the Queens Royals to Duty Noble Field for the first time tonight. Had a chance to speak to Coach Jake Hendrick yesterday. You can read that feature over at jeanspage.com if you are a subscriber. If you're not, you certainly should be. Nobody giving you better information about Mississippi State than we are. But let's take a quick look at how the season has gone. The Royals currently 2-10 and on a 9-game losing streak. They opened the season taking 2 of 3 from Appalachian State, which was a big win for them. And Coach Hendrick said, you know, hey, they knew they had a challenging non-conference schedule, and they're a program that's building. They've only been D1 baseball for a few years. But, you know, App State, not necessarily a baseball power. That said, you know, to win a game like that is big. The Mountaineers are 6-6 this year, so it's not like they're just a flawed team. But they take game one, lose game two, and then win a shootout in game two of a Sunday doubleheader, 16-11. The first midweek game of the year takes them to South Carolina for the second straight year, and they lose that game 7-2. And then in Charlotte, North Carolina, at the Stick Williams Dreams Fields, they play a trio of games against Yale University, and they're swept in the series. One of those games ends in eight innings, a mercy ruling, 16-3. Game two, a much more competitive game. They lose 4-3. And then finally, in extra innings, pretty crazy, against Yale. It's a tie ball game, 3-3, and they lose 10-3. Says a little bit about their bullpen. High Point University hosted Queens back on February 25th. They beat them 21-7. Midweek pitching, certainly not a strong point for the Royals. And then last week, a four-game series against West Virginia. And they play in these pro ballparks. And 7-1, 11-7. And that's a game where West Virginia trailed in the game and got hot late. And then they 11-1 game. And then finally, the mercy ruling game on Monday, 17-3. They just run out of pitching. So losers of nine straight, but not all those games have been blowouts. And so a lot of people are saying, hey, we should mercy rule them in three games. I certainly hope that's the case, but I won't be surprised if we have a game go the full nine. I do not expect to lose a game. But Jake Barber is a young man that Coach mentioned. Is a guy they expect to be a big-time player for them. He already leads the team at hitting at 319. He has one tank, six RBIs. Leads the team with 15 hits. Also has seven walks to his credit. So an on-base percentage of 429. One stolen base attempt. They're not a team that runs the bases very aggressively. Just seven attempts all year. They're 5 of 7. Their opponents have kind of run at will, though. And Mississippi State has not been thrown out yet on a stolen base attempt. But opponents of the Queens Royals, 30 of 36 in stolen base attempts. So there may be some opportunities there for us to take some bases as we get guys on. They have one other hitter hitting over 300 among the regulars, and that's Will Budnick. Hitting 302, 13 hits on the year, 7 RBI, which is second on the team. And Budnick is the first baseman, 6'1", 205-pounder out of Charlotte, North Carolina, product of South Mecklenburg High School, but 6'1", 205. And then, you get a little deeper into this. Tyler Peters is a guy that is a little bit down the depth chart a bit, has played sparingly, started three games, has appeared in six, is hitting a cool 400, four hits and 10 at-bats there. They've hit 12 tanks as a team. The leading home run hitter is Justin Hudson, who has four. He's hitting 208, also leads the team with 11 RBI. Anibal Rivera has three tanks on the year for 5 RBI, so not a lot of people getting on base ahead of him. Hudson also leads the team with 21 strikeouts, and they have struck out 115 times. So a lot of swing and miss in this lineup. And it'll be interesting to kind of see how things go. As a team, they are hitting just 221. So it should be a good weekend for the Bulldog pitchers to kind of pad the ERA a little bit, but also to probably elevate the strikeout numbers. This is a team that is really, really challenged from an offensive standpoint. And if you don't go out there and walk the ballpark, you're going to have an opportunity, of course, to get some separation in the game. Queens pitchers have hit 26 hitters, while the Royals themselves have been hit just 16 times. But extra base hits, just 89. They've given up 153. So when they do get hits more times than not, it is a single. I guess to be fair about that, 15 doubles is a team, 2 triples, and a dozen home runs. So you can do the math there. But 60, it looks like 60 of their, or close to 60 of their base hits have been singles. Yeah, slugging percentage is 358, something great there. But they have walked 45 times. Anibal Rivera is a guy that leads the team with 11 of those RBIs. But, this I'm not going to sit here and make this team out to be more than they are. Mississippi State should have won all three of these games. Now, they're going to be short one of their weekend starters. Coach Hendrick tells me yesterday that Kenson Green, who has started every weekend, will not pitch this weekend. He's a little bit banged up. He is 0-1 on the year with an ERA of 10.03. We'll not see him. He's worked 11.2 innings, so he won't go. They're going to TBA it for Sunday. They're going to go ahead and throw Landry Jerica. 0-2, 6.08. He's going to be their Friday night guy. He is a right-hander out of Greenwood, Arkansas, so he'll probably have some people in attendance. Had a really rough outing against Yale. The other starts have been decent. Yeah, but against Yale, 4 innings pitch, allowed 8 runs on 11 hits. He walked 2 and struck out 3. Against App State, 8 strikeouts, 2 walks, works 3.2 innings, allows just 1 run on 2 hits. Then against West Virginia, which is a Power 4 team, right at a hit per, gives up 6 hits and 2 runs and 5 and 2-thirds of an inning. So really good start for him. But he is the Friday night guy, and probably their best guy when you think about the stuff aspect of it. But, again, you know, you have a rough outing every now and again, but opponents are hitting 365. Now, the Sunday guy, Adrian Cusada, is going to move up to Saturday. His numbers are a little bit better in some respects. 0-2 on the year, but a 3.60 ERA. Another right-handed pitcher out of the Bronx, you know, out of product of South Bronx High School. Had a really good outing against Yale and a really good outing against West Virginia. App State was kind of up and down. Goes 3 2/3, allows 4 runs on 6 hits. But against Yale, 6 1/3, 2 hits, 2 runs. West Virginia, 5 innings pitched, 4 hits, 2 runs. Not a huge strikeout guy, but he's a little bit less than a strikeout per. But he will be the Saturday guy. He has led the staff with 15 innings pitched, allowing 12 hits, so less than a hit per inning. Allowed 6 earned runs, walked 5, and struck out 9. So not a big strikeout guy. Jerika, the Friday night guy, is a little more of a strikeout guy. The second best strikeout guy is Kenson Green, who we will not see. So that Sunday game could get a little bit lopsided. And Coach Hendricks says they're going to just kind of see what the first two games tell them, and they'll make a decision. But the opponent's hitting 352 against this group. And whoever they throw on Sunday will be making probably their first start of the year. Joey Ruler is a guy that's been their midweek starter. Things have not been good for him. He's made 4 appearances and 3 starts. They did not have a midweek game this week, but he is a junior left-hander out of the Charlotte Catholic High School. Did throw in relief against App State and then started against South Carolina High Point and the Monday game against West Virginia. And his last two outings has not gone 2 innings. He's allowed a combined 18 runs on 13 hits. Walks have been a bit of a problem, but again, not a big strikeout guy either. Not a lot of swing and miss in the game. But, yeah, hey, they're a Division I ball team. These runs all count. The wins all count. But, you know, the top reliever, I guess you could say, then there's been a couple guys that have pitched regularly, like Ryan Brown has 5 release appearances, Jack Brooker with 6, Derek Westfall with 5, and Jack Renall with 5. But the ERAs for these guys are just not great. You get outside of Cusada, Brody McFadden has thrown 1 inning and didn't allow a run, but he walked 4 and struck out 2. But he has a 0 ERA. But outside of that, everybody's ERA is just elevated. We mentioned Jerika, 6.08, and then you get into the relievers, the primary relievers, you're 5.59, 7.27, and then 8 on up into the teens. And not a lot of those guys have seen a ton of work, but as a staff, an ERA of 9.52. Yeah, I suspect that's going to go up this weekend. It's so interesting, too, that, you know, we mentioned Ryan Brown. He had the 1 save that the staff has recorded so far. But they've pitched 103 innings and allowed 153 hits. So 1.5 hits per inning. And then on top of that, you factor in those walks. There's a good chance you're going to get, you know, multiple base runners on in an inning. And they haven't played anybody in Mississippi State's caliber yet. You know, so it's going to be a rather interesting dynamic in that respect. 24 wild pitches as a staff, 26 hit by pitches. Allowed a lot of sacrifices. You know, they don't do a good job of controlling the running game. I feel a lot like this, like I did about the Manhattan series. I suspect that there'll probably be 2 of these games that'll go, you know, 7 innings, 8 innings maybe, you know. We'll see what happens you know, Friday, Saturday. I think Sunday will be a game that kind of gets away from them. And that's my expectation. You know, maybe you have a competitive game on Saturday. You know, we'll see. But, you know, when you start thinking about, you know, pitching matchups and the fact that, you know, Quezada has been, you know, a little more in the realm of expectation for good college pitchers with an ERA of 3.60, you kind of expect, you know, maybe one guy will come out there and do a good job. And the batting average against Quezada is just 222. So the Saturday game may prove to be the more competitive game. Looking at fielding numbers here, 956, so not great. You know, and it's one of those things, too. They've had plenty of opportunities, plenty of chances defensively, 427 chances defensively, and they've made 19 errors. 19. And you don't know how favorable the scoring can be. They have turned 8 double plays. They've hit into 8 double plays, too. But the stolen base numbers are crazy. I mean, it's just, it's nuts. You could pretty much run at will here, you know. So, you know, we'll see how things go. But I expect State to win this series handily. And will probably be a chance for us to kind of throw some other guys. You know, and that's the thing you think about. You got 4 games this week. You got 5 games next week. And so you got to kind of start planning towards next week's midweek pitching. You kind of know who you're going to have on the weekend against Texas. But you know, maybe you give a guy 1 or 2 innings here, but I think, you know, next week you'll see. I think there's a chance you'll see Nolan Stevens and Noah Sullivan pitch next week. But you know, what you'd really like to see is to see your starters this weekend work deep in the ball games, and then maybe you save some arms, you know, for next week. You know, and you certainly wouldn't want to have to throw Chase Hungate out there twice this weekend. You need to just kind of take care of business. And then that sets you up even better for next week. And that's the whole point of all of this, right? And this is one of the bigger challenges that we have from a innings coverage standpoint. So you think you got to go get 27 outs in a ball game. If you can reduce that and have some mercy rule games like you had on Tuesday, you begin to think, okay, well, that kind of sets us up better for next week. So, you know, anytime that you can go 7 instead of 9, which is great, you know, that's 2 less innings you got to go account for. And so when you consider how many games we're playing, you know, 6 games in 8 days, those kinds of things matter. You know, because you still got to have somebody go out there, because we can't afford another midweek loss, right? Everybody kind of sees it for what it is. We cannot have another midweek loss. And so we need to take care of business this weekend and then head down to Biloxi. Old Dominion on Tuesday, and then Nichols on Wednesday. And it's interesting, too. You know, we talk about, you know, Old Dominion, and we'll talk about them a little bit more on Monday. But you know, Old Dominion kind of making a swing through the South here. And they're not a bad ball club. You know, that's one of the things I think it's important to understand. You know, we've played, you know, Louisiana at times down in Biloxi. There's a lot to all this. But the Monarchs headed to Auburn this weekend. They're 3-7, right? And so the expectations are going to take it. But, you know, again, we'll talk about them more on Monday. But once they finish up their trip at Auburn on Sunday, they're going to go ahead and head over to Biloxi. They're going to play Mississippi State and then head to Southern Miss. And so an interesting little stretch for them is they'll play 3 teams that, you know, we think have a real chance to make the NCAA tournament. I told you guys in our preseason preview, I think Auburn's a kind of a dark horse, not a team that I expect to contend, but a team that I think will be improved over last year. And so that's something to kind of consider too. Can you go 9-inning games, or can you have some mercy rule games in the midweek to kind of save some arms for the weekend? And so what you'd love to see happen is, like, maybe you throw a Charlie Foster and he gives you 5-6 innings in a lopsided win. We want to win every game we can. And so you start, you know, you get a little bit over your skis a little bit and you can put yourself in trouble. But Nichols State heads into the weekend on a 7-game losing streak. They're 5-9. And they will host the Texas A&M Corpus Christi Islanders. But it has not been a good stretch for Nichols. And, again, we'll talk more about them on Monday. But kind of going back to, You know, it looked interesting earlier in the year, and then they go to LSU, and they get mercy ruled, and they have been in a tailspin ever since. And they've really struggled to score runs. Was it 8 runs in the last 6 games? Is that right? Yeah. I mean, it's so difficult to win like that. They got beat on Tuesday night 19-0. And so you start pairing up, you know, your midweek pitching. You know, they have really struggled in these midweek games. They have not won a midweek game yet, to be fair about that. So, but you've got to think about, you got to have a mind on next week as you make your pitching decisions. And so it may be like a bullpen thing this weekend, you know. And I think about guys like JT Schnuer, right? If you're able to get a lopsided game, maybe you put him out there this weekend, let him eat up some innings and kind of get his confidence back. You know, had a tough outing against Troy, you know, top 25 matchup, and I'm sure that's riding his wave a little bit. And so you need to get him back on the mound, but also maybe not in a high leverage situation. And there's some guys out there on this team that that need to get some work, and this may be a good weekend to do it. And then hopefully you can save some arms for next week when, again, 5 games in a week is tough. And at some point, everybody has to do it. But we've got a lot of baseball in front of us. I'm eager to see really what this team is about. We got a glimpse last week. And, again, there was so many opportunities for us to really kind of have that breakthrough win, really against Arizona or Oklahoma State. We just couldn't get the big hit in the ninth. Well, it wasn't necessary. It's a pretty solid strategy. You don't have to worry about the dramatic hit in the ninth if you beat them in 7, right? That's a great strategy. It's just so difficult to do that. But taking care of Southern Miss was big, and this coaching staff needed this, this fan base needed this, and this team needed this. But Texas and Schwarzenegger coming in here next weekend, we expect huge crowds, huge. And again, the 100-year anniversary of the last on-campus meeting between Texas and Mississippi State. Yeah, everything really since then, outside of that 21 trip to Arlington, has been in the postseason. So despite the fact that Texas and Mississippi State have kind of been blue bloods of the sport, we have not met many times and certainly not on campus. But every decision that we make pitching-wise over the course of the next 5 games has got to kind of be thinking about next week, you know, about Texas. So Justin Parker's kind of got his work cut out for him, but also, too, Park's got some guys that I think when you consider the quality of competition over the course of the next 5 games, that you should be able to throw some guys kind of down the bullpen a little bit to save your high-quality arms for SEC play. Now, with that in mind, I'm sure you've seen Mississippi State will throw Pico Cone on Friday, Ben Davis on Saturday, and then Carson Ligon is bumped to Sunday. A lot of people have said, Steve, what do you think about that? I thought Stone maybe had a better chance to stay on the weekend than Carson, because I really felt like, as we broke down on Monday, that Stone, while he has had some walk issues, got some ground balls and didn't get outs from them, and that kind of drives the numbers up just a little bit. But I do think the Ben Davis move makes a lot of sense. I thought maybe McPherson. McPherson's also a guy that, you know, that's going to throw on weekends. But when you look at Ben Davis, and I think sometimes he is kind of ridden under the radar a little bit. But Ben Davis has had 5 appearances so far, which is second most on the team. I don't know if you guys are aware of that. The only guy that's had more is Chase Hungate. Chase has worked mainly 1-inning stints. But Ben Davis, 2.53 ERA. He's worked 10.2 innings, allowed 7 hits per, and just 3 runs, 18 strikeouts against 2 walks. That's filthy, man. You're talking 9-1 there. He's allowed the 1 home run and 39 at-bats. Opponents are hitting .179 against him. And so I don't expect his numbers to change this weekend. I expect that that's going to be the case against Queens. I think he'll go out there and kind of rip it. And but he's a big physical kid, and he was a guy. Lamontas told me way back in the end of fall. He goes, nobody's even really talking about this guy, but he's going to throw major innings for us. And kind of looking at his numbers, on the season, the longest he worked was 3 innings against Southern Miss down in Hattiesburg, and was really good. He had 5 strikeouts against Troy, and of course gives up. It's such a shame that we're dominating that lineup, right? And Pruitt gives up a solo shot. and Davis gives up a solo shot. And you look up and it's like, man, we have dominated this lineup and we're down 2-0. It took a while for the offense to get going. But, you know, looking at how Davis has gone here, you know, is this a Johnny Holstaff day? I don't think so. I think maybe you want to stretch him out a little bit. But his longest stretch so far has been 3 innings. And, like, even against Troy, you kind of saw maybe in that third inning, maybe he's fading just a little bit. You saw it a little bit against Oklahoma State, too. So I think you feel confident with him with 3, but maybe you get him to 4 and then turn it over to your bullpen. And, of course, you kind of got a backfill behind him, right? Because Ben has been that first guy of the bullpen in many respects. So do you pair him up with Ryan McPherson? I don't know. You know, we'll see, you know, how things go. But, again, you know, just 7 hits in 10.2 innings. And his first 2 outings, he strikes out combined 8, didn't walk anybody. And he's only walked 2 hitters all year. It's crazy. I mean, it really is. And so it makes sense to me that you put a competitive guy in that spot and a guy that has routinely kept the ball down. That makes good sense to me. Against Oklahoma State, he threw 44 pitches. That's the longest outing from a pitch standpoint of the year. He only had to throw 37 against Southern Miss. But, you know, a lot of times, too, we're putting him in a situation where he's kind of been the bridge guy. So now we're going to give him a chance to go out there and kind of get things done. But it's so interesting when you kind of break down how all this has kind of come to be, you know, when you allow just 7 hits and, you know, one of them is a tank. But it's been mainly singles, you know. 7 hits, I guess 4 of them were singles. But the punch-out numbers are ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. And he showed a lot of passion and emotion on the mound last week. And so now, Ligon goes to Sunday. And I think most people were expecting Ligon to come out and that maybe Stone would stay in or maybe you throw McPherson. You know, some people even mentioned Mekhi Grant. I don't think Grant's ready for that. I do think maybe you extend him a little bit, give him a chance to throw a couple of innings. But, you know, looking at Carson's numbers, and, you know, the analytics have been good, but – yeah, in 3 starts, he's got a 1-1 record, ERA of 5. He's only thrown 9 innings in 3 outings. He's allowed 10 hits, that's over a hit per, and 7 runs, 5 of them earned, 14 Ks against 4 walks. It's really been the issue, kind of like the combo. He always has that one kind of come-apart inning where he'll walk a couple guys and then give up a big hit. And we got to get a clean sheet. Got to play good defense behind him. Opponents are hitting .263 against him, which, believe it or not, is actually one of the highest batting averages against on the team. Of the regulars, it is the highest, right? The only guy that has pitched this year that has a higher batting average against is JT Schnuer, who only pitched 1/3 of an inning, you know, and gave up 4 hits, you know. And so Ligon obviously is a guy that Justin Parker sees some things that perhaps we're not seeing. But, you know, I trust Justin Parker, and I know what he did last year, and I expect him to do the same thing this year. Kind of running through some numbers here, too. Like we talk about this weekend, about eating up innings and things like that. I think this weekend's a really a good opportunity for Gavin Black to get back out there. Gavin's a guy at times, like, you saw how well he pitched against Virginia, but that was kind of an outlier. There were some times he goes out there and he walks guys, and then he's got enough power where he strikes people out. But I think there's a good chance you see him this weekend, especially if we get in a game where we get some separation. Give him and Schnuer a chance to get out there and pitch and just – and I hate to use the term mop up, but to put some guys out there to just kind of get them back on the mound and kind of get them going again, because we're going to need these guys. I mean, Luke Dotson last week looked as good as he's ever looked, you know. Do I want to throw him this weekend? You know, maybe an inning, you know. But I think this weekend, provided how bad at Queens is offensively, that we need to work in some guys. And I know it's what's going to happen, too. We'll put a guy in there, and people are like, why are we throwing this guy? And I think it's important to understand, when you consider all the innings that we're going to have to eat up over the course of the next, you know, 9 days, some of these guys down the bullpen are going to have to pitch to save guys for games that really are a little more meaningful. It's important to understand. But it's so crazy, too, to look at the, you know, numbers for Pico. You know, there were so many people early in the year that just weren't sure. You know, I just don't see Friday night Pico. I think you see it now. You know, he's 2-0, and we've won all three of his starts, obviously, but a 1.53 ERA, 17.2 innings pitch, which is easily the most on the team. He's allowed 9 hits, so about 0.5 per. Allowed 3 earned runs, and, of course, one comes right after the first walk of the year. But 28 Ks against 2 walks. He's given up a triple and a home run. Opponents are hitting .148. So you feel pretty confident that Pico can go out there and give you a good start tonight and improve his record to 3-0 and give the Bulldogs, 4-0 record on Fridays. And that, when you start doing that, even if Pico's not the guy that's the pitcher of record, when you win on Fridays, you got a chance to have great weekends, as you guys are well aware. But, I think Sierra is a guy, too, that kind of factors in. Do you throw him this weekend, or do you throw him next week? Is he a starter for you in the midweek next week? You got so many innings to eat up. So it's important, I think, for people to kind of understand that you're going to see a lot of guys pitch over the course of the next few days. We got to get Robert Fordenberry going, too. You know, he's a guy that was kind of up and down at times in the fall. But he's kind of a refined skill set in some respect. He's kind of got a unique skill with that changeup. And people forget he was the National Junior College Pitcher of the Year. So we've got to find a way to get him going, and maybe that happens this weekend. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. The Stark Vegas Clubhouse is the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle when you're bringing a large group to town. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. You can Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Their Facebook page auto-populates. You can peruse the pictures of all the amenities available to you and your guests, the full-service kitchen, the great wet bar, the back porch area, the fire pit area, neatly positioned just out past the Highlands off 182, just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. You can do your tailgating right there. How cool is that? Super cool, right? Well, we've stayed there, I can tell you from personal experience. It is a great place. 6 bedrooms, 2, soon to be 3 baths, and you'll be so excited to have everybody under one roof. We don't get together enough. We all say it. Well, take some action and plan a trip to the Golden Triangle area, whether it be a midweek trip, maybe you got some vacation time you can spend and come up here and enjoy the Golden Triangle and all your favorite places to eat and go without a lot of the traffic of game day. But if you're coming up for a game day weekend, nothing's better than getting everybody together, just enjoying some ball and then enjoying being together. Now, when you Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse, their Facebook page comes up and some booking options. You can book through Airbnb or VRBO, completely up to you. But if you want to save some money, book through the Evolve website with promo code BSR10. That's BSR, the number 10, 10, get you 10% off your stay. So you are getting a discount to stay at the premium place to stay in the Golden Triangle, the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Be sure and check it out today. Okay, Mississippi State men's basketball will wrap up the men's regular season on Saturday as we head to Arkansas. Very disappointing loss earlier this week, as you guys are well aware. No need for us to go back and rehash all that stuff, but you lose that game 87-82 Tuesday night in overtime. Was not great. We all know it. But now we head to Arkansas, and we have taken some really good teams to Arkansas over the years and come home with some hurt feelings. We need to avoid that, and we're going into a very difficult environment on senior day against a team that has had some moments at times this year where they have played really well. Let's take a quick look at the Razorbacks before we get out of here. 18-12 overall, 7-10 in the conference, 12-4 at Bud Walton Arena. Best chance to get them has been kind of away. They are just 6-8 away from Bud Walton Arena. But open up the year in an exhibition, and they blast Kansas, who was number one at the time. They lose to TCU in Fort Worth as part of a charity event. But, they get Lipscomb. They lose to number 8 Baylor and Dallas at the American Airlines Arena. They get Troy. They beat Pacific, Little Rock, Maryland, Eastern Shore. Maybe we should schedule them. I think we did in women's. Yeah, we did. Illinois, they lose to Illinois in the CBS Thanksgiving game in Kansas City, Missouri. 90-77. They go to Miami and win down there in the SEC-ACC Challenge. They get Texas San Antonio and then play number 14 Michigan in Madison Square Garden in the Jimmy V Classic and get them by two. They play in North Little Rock against UCA, get them 82-57. They get North Carolina A&T and then Oakland. And then we get an SEC play. They travel to Tennessee, who was number one at the time, and they get absolutely shelled 76-52. They host Ole Miss, who has played really good basketball this year, and Ole Miss goes into Arkansas and wins that game 73-66, so one of the few losses at home. They've actually lost two in a row as Florida goes in there and gets them by eight. They go on the road to LSU and lose to a pretty bad LSU team by four, and then the losing streak in SEC play reaches six as they lose at Missouri 83-65. And a lot of people left this team, you know, kind of dead and buried. Is it six or five? I guess it's five. Yeah, they start out 0-5 in SEC play. They bounce back and they get Georgia at home 68-65 and then lose again in Bud Walton to Oklahoma. And then just when it felt like everything was over, they go to Lexington, and you knew Calipari would have the kids up and ready to play against Kentucky, and he beats Mark Pope 89-79. Very significant win at the time for Arkansas. And it kind of reminded people of what Arkansas could be. Maybe not this year, but under John Calipari. They build off of that. They go to Austin, Texas, and they win down there by eight. Welcome Alabama in, and again, it's a great year in conference. And they lose by four to a very good Alabama team. They get the return trip from LSU. They beat them by a dozen and then lose at A&M and then lose at Auburn. Those games are both very competitive, decided by single digits. And then they get Missouri, the redemption game against them by seven. And then Texas, you end up sweeping Texas. How about that? Texas goes up there, plays an overtime game, and the Razorbacks win it by five. They go to South Carolina, and we've talked extensively about how tough it is to go into Columbia, South Carolina, and come out with a victory. Well, Arkansas didn't. They went down there and got beat 72-53. And then they go to Vandy, and we know going to Vandy, that was a big win for us early. Vandy's been okay, and they get that one by 13. And so 11 a.m. tip Saturday, I know many of you are excited about that, and, you know, State – last report was still hanging in there as the number nine seed in the projected SEC bracket. Let's look inside the numbers here. We'll look at conference play. If we can find it, yeah, here we go. Oh, I guess they don't break it down by conference play. But whatever. Here we go. We'll find a PDF. Look at our conference play, SEC play for Arkansas. I'm concerned about the game just because of the fact they have been so good at home. But in conference play, again, they're 7-10, 4-4 at home, and 3-6 away in SEC games. So we can't blow this up a little bit. I'm getting old, you know. Having to use the magnifying glass here. But Therio Adu, 14 starts in SEC play. Is averaging 13.7 points a game, and Fland, or is it Boogie Fland? Yeah, these are backwards. Adu Therio. Yeah, Boogie Fland, 12.8 points. John L. Davis, 12.1. DJ Wagner, 10.6. And then Zvonimir Ivizic, we'll try that. He's at 10.6. So you got five players. I guess one's 11.3. My mistake. But you got five players averaging double figures in SEC play. So pretty balanced scoring attack there. They're averaging 71 points a game, giving up right at 74 in SEC play. So all these games are very competitive. We're going to have to shoot the basketball well. And, again, I don't know what to expect when it comes to a crowd there. You know, we'll see how things go. They have not been prolific from beyond the arc, and that kind of works in our favor. They're making just over 6 3-pointers a game. Now, they may attempt more because of the fact that we have been so porous at times against shots from the perimeter. But they're 107 of 356 for right at 30% and giving up about 33%. So, I mean, they've been outshot by about one three-point shot per game, shooting about 73% from the line. Rebounding has been a bit of a detriment for them. in SEC play, averaging 34 boards a game, giving up 37, so, you know, less than four in the differential against Arkansas. Dished out 211 assists. That's 12 a game. Opponents are getting 13.5. But steals have been, I don't know, just okay, I guess. Working out about 7 a game, and they're giving up about 7 a game, so it kind of works out to be 6 one way, half a dozen the other. They will get up and defend a little bit in the post, even though rebounding has been a bit of a challenge for them. But, again, you know, they started out so poorly, but then they have now won 3 of their last 4 in SEC play. So I think we are getting the best version that Arkansas has put on the court this year, which gives me, you know, more cause for concern. I think everybody kind of sees it for what it is, you know. But the reality of it is that, you know, we, again, believe that we are safely in the tournament. But, you know, you really want to avoid that 8-9 game. And I think that's kind of where we are. Let's take a quick look at the latest bracketology. And that just came up this morning. We'll go to the Joe Lenardi, as you guys call him, Joey Brackets. You know, Arkansas currently expected to make the tournament. And so a loss this weekend may change the trajectory of them. And we'll see how that goes. But this is a team that is playing for something. They're not just playing out the string. We are currently projected as the number 8 seed in Indianapolis against Gonzaga. An 8-9 game, and we will be paired up with Houston and Omaha in the second round. Of course, we expect Houston to win that game handily. So, would be difficult to get out of Indianapolis and out of that first weekend. And you know, now you're in a situation now you feel like in order to play your way onto the 7 line, you probably need to win this game and then win a couple games in a tournament to give you an opportunity to get off the 8-9 game. And if you make the 8-9 game, that's the second consecutive year we've done that. But again, 3 consecutive NCAA tournaments, you got to feel good about that. And one of the things that I want to say about that too, I know sometimes we get so caught up in the moment, it's difficult for us to see the bigger picture. And I don't know that we have been in better shape men's basketball-wise as a program since the early 2000s when Rick Stansbury was doing some really good things here. Of course, we won an SEC championship in 2004. But I think it's important to kind of understand, even when we lose a game that we really need to win and we expect to win, that, yeah, it hurts in the moment, but to look at the bigger picture. And that's one of the things I hear a lot, too. People say, wait, there's not a lot of good things going on. Just last week, we were having a discussion that, you know, that men's basketball was ranked, baseball was ranked, women's basketball just getting votes, men's golf was ranked, I guess women's golf was ranked, tennis. I mean, you know, there's a lot of things that are happening that are a very, very positive nature when it kind of comes to Mississippi State athletics. And I think that's important, too, to look at. It's so easy to kind of look at this thing day to day and week to week, and that's how you build a month. But it's important, too, not to get so close to the trees that you can't enjoy the forest. And that's kind of – we all are guilty of that at times. But when you take a deep breath and you realize that, hey, this is a couple of years ago, we'd have given anything to make the NCAA tournament, and you just got to get in, right? And we hoped to be better than the 8-9 line, and we still have an opportunity to play our way in, but we're running out of opportunities to do so. So, again, we expect both the men's and the women's teams to make the NCAA tournament, which has proven to be a real rarity in these parts. But I look forward to the day that we're not just thinking, you know, hey, we just want to make the tournament and update our banners in Humphrey Coliseum. We want to go play for something significant. And I think many of you felt like I did, this team was capable of making a Sweet 16. I still believe that. But I think we've made life a lot more difficult on ourselves by dropping some games at home that we should have won, including that Texas game. And you win that Texas game, and you're probably on the 7 line today, headed to Arkansas. So again, 11 a.m. tip, be sure and check it out. Very significant game for both teams. And how many times did we say during the Rick Ray era that we just want to be playing meaningful basketball in March? And typically this time of year, we were just kind of ready for basketball to be over. So let's not kind of defecate on where we are today by forgetting where we've come from. And again, if we don't make it, if we don't win a game in the NCAA tournament, I'm going to be extremely disappointed. I am. But I also understand, too, that we are trending in the right direction. Of course, we need to keep Chris Jans here. I think we have a good coach. I think maybe he should consider some things, you know, on his staff on the offensive side. We have not been nearly as good offensive, which we expected to be. But, you know, that's his decisions to make. But the reality of it is we've got a big game to play on Saturday. I need to find a way to get a win. Again, if you hadn't done so, go to DirtyNobleBook.com, and you can get signed copies of all of my sports titles and When the Bottom Falls. I have a lot of people that tell me that's my best book, and I appreciate that. If you haven't floated, you need to come float with us, and if you're planning to do it during ballgame weekends, you need to plan ahead, schedule ahead. You can call my lovely wife, Dana, at 662-268-7601, and she can answer your question. She's a registered nurse. A lot of people have questions. And she can answer those questions, not just being a facilitator of the float spa itself. She is a registered nurse and you know, can kind of advise you a little bit on how floating may be able to help you if you're a person that suffers with chronic anxiety or chronic pain, or you just need a break. We may be able to help you. And so give her a call today. Set up an appointment. And the tours are free, right? And most of the time we have complimentary peppermint too. So be sure and check that out, and certainly come be with us over at jeanspage.com. Get your first month for a dollar. How cool is that? First month for a buck. Come sign up today as we get ready to prepare for March Madness. And in addition to that, too, getting into SEC play in baseball, and then just 11 days, Mississippi State spring football will take the field. And as we begin to prepare for year two under Coach Jeff Levy. Well, that's going to do it for today. Man, we've had a great week. I hope you guys have a great weekend. Looking forward to recapping some Mississippi State wins on Monday's show. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.